This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Wednesday. We are going to get to some of the communist response to all that stuff from last night, but I told you an hour ago what was coming now, and now it has arrived. We are doing a special Wednesday edition of Medal of Honor Monday on the, I guess, not that it's Medal of Honor Wednesday. Either way, couple gentlemen last night, couple beasts, they had already earned the Medal of Honor, and last night they got it draped around their necks. And I thought it would be appropriate, since the citations are now publicly available, to read said Medal of Honor citation. So let's do the first one. The first one is the helicopter pilot guy. I mean, you remember when we went into Caracas, in the middle of the night, you roll your R's when you speak Spanish, Chris. When we went into Caracas in the middle of the night, we didn't lose a man, right? It was flawless. But they were shooting back. And we did have people hit. Now, imagine taking one bullet in the legs. One. You got shot in the leg. Imagine the pain. I mean, when's the last time you stubbed your toe or hit your shin on something? Now imagine taking a bullet in your leg. Now imagine taking multiple bullets in your leg. And you can't lay down and call for mommy. You are flying a helicopter and you continue to fly it masterfully. Mr. Eric A. Slover, United States Army Chief Warrant Officer 5, got his Medal of Honor last night.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
Chief Warrant Officer 5, Eric A. Slover, distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty on January 3rd, 2026, during a mission in Venezuela in support of Operation Absolute Resolve. Chief Warrant Officer 5, Slover, piloted his MH-47 as the lead aircraft of the operation, tasked with executing a highly complex infiltration through hostile integrated air defense systems to safely deliver military forces. During ingress, that's the way in, Chief Warrant Officer 5 Slover skillfully led the helicopter force through a dense jungle valley in a mountainous region, navigating marginal weather conditions, numerous topographical hazards, and near insurmountable surface-to-air threats. Upon touching down at the designated landing zone, Chief Warrant Officer 5 Slover's aircraft was immediately engaged by multiple machine gun positions at close range. The hostile fire resulted in 15 armor-piercing rounds entering his cockpit, with 4 rounds striking his leg. Despite the intense and effective enemy fire and at great personal risk, Chief Warrant Officer 5 Slover maintained his situational awareness and aircraft's position in the line of fire to ensure the safe infiltration of the military forces. After the force disembarked, and despite suffering significant life-threatening injuries, Chief Warrant Officer 5 Slover identified hostile heavy machine gun positions that were engaging his aircraft and targeting the ground forces. He maneuvered his aircraft to enable his door gunner to deliver effective fire, successfully neutralizing the threats. Chief Warrant Officer 5 Slover's heroic actions undoubtedly saved countless American lives and ensured the complete and overwhelming success of the mission. His gallantry under fire and extraordinary valor are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself and the United States Army.
Daggone.
Then there was this one, which Trump mentioned last night.
Many truly extraordinary American patriots, but there is one last living legend to honor before we go.
He is one more heroic American aviator, Navy fighter pilot. Royce Williams served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, flying more than 220 missions. In the skies over Korea in 1952, Royce was in the dogfight of a lifetime, legendary dogfight, flying through blizzard conditions. His squadron was ambushed by seven Soviet fighter planes. It was his first aerial combat of the war, and despite being massively outnumbered and outgunned, Royce led the takedown of four enemy jets and almost destroyed the others, vanquishing his adversaries while taking 263 bullets to his own plane and being seriously hurt. His story was secret for over 50 years. He didn't even want to tell his wife, but the legend grew and grew. But tonight, at 100 years old, this brave Navy captain is finally getting the recognition he deserves. He was a legend long before this evening. Royce, please stand up, and I will ask the First Lady of the United States to present Captain Royce Williams with his Congressional Medal of Honor.
So let's read the citation for Mr. Elmer Royce Williams, born in Wilmot, South Dakota, in 1925.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty on the 18th of November 1952, while leading a division of three jet fighters attached to Fighter Squadron 781 and embarked on the USS Oriskany, that was the name of the naval ship they took off from, while flying a combat patrol mission over the northeastern coastal waters of enemy-held North Korea, Lieutenant Williams demonstrated extraordinary heroism by intercepting a superior force of attacking enemy MiG-15 fighters in order to protect the ships of Task Force 77. After thwarting the enemy's initial attack, he maneuvered his aircraft to make two firing passes on one MiG, which then spiraled into the sea. He inflicted heavy damage to a second MiG-15, which started smoking badly and retired from the fight. When his own aircraft was severely damaged by a direct hit from one of the remaining enemy MiG-15s, Lieutenant Williams evaded further enemy attack while continuing to direct the dogfight. He eventually found cover in a cloud bank, broke off the engagement, and miraculously landed his nearly uncontrollable aircraft on the USS Oriskany. His exceptional airmanship, coupled with his complete disregard for his own personal safety, resulted in the destruction of three enemy MiG-15s and severe damage to a fourth, and undoubtedly saved the lives of hundreds of Task Force 77 sailors. By his undaunted courage, bold initiative, and total devotion to duty, Lieutenant Williams reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the U.S. United States Naval Service. That was friggin' special. That was special. He lived to be 100. And we don't have many World War II veterans left. World War II, Korea, Vietnam. Imagine dedicating so much of your life to fighting for this country. You actually make it to 100 years old. And that in and of itself, it's not just impressive, it's difficult. I know a couple people, not quite 100, but in their 90s, solidly in their 90s. And I'll tell you, they're sad a lot because everyone they know dies. That you don't have any friends left. You don't have any siblings left. Everyone's dead. It's so rare to make it that old. But this guy made it to 100 years old. Then he gets a phone call one day. Hey, we need to put you on a plane to Washington, D.C. because somebody heard about what you did in Korea over 70 years ago, and you're going to earn the Medal of Honor. Is that not just the coolest thing in the world? And Melania, Donald Trump's wife, obviously, Melania Trump was the one who strapped it to his neck. That's really, really cool. It was an awesome moment. It was a night of many, many awesome moments. The introduction of the hockey team and, of course, making Democrats look stupid and all the other things I love so much. But he saved that one to the end. I mean, Trump's such a showman. He knows what he's doing. He saved that one to the end. And, man, got to be honest, the old Oracle with his frosty heart almost got a little choked up. I said almost. Okay, I didn't get choked up, but it was like someone was cutting onions there for a minute. Anyway, I'll do some emails next.
You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show. You're welcome.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on an amazing, amazing Wednesday, a hump day. So before I get to the emails, remember, I'm a cigar guy now. Don't shake your head, Chris, before I even get it out. So we have Carol Roth coming up in 10 minutes to talk about the economy and other things, but you know, I haven't traditionally been much of a cigar guy. Kind of one of those once every 3 years at a golf outing type thing. But I had a couple in the month of December, I think it was, or January. One was New Year's Eve, decided to have a cigar. I think it looks very distinguished. I don't think it's very healthy, though. So last night, for the State of the Union address, you know, I've told you my mentor is Michael Berry. He's the reason I'm sitting here behind this microphone. He's given me so much guidance. He's obviously a wonderful nationally syndicated radio guy. He's amazing. But he's a friend. Like, we're good buddies. And I, as soon as the show was over, I took off from Michael's house to watch the State of the Union address with Michael. And he suggested we sit outside for it and have a cigar. And I did it. And I'll be honest, I feel like I'm clearing my throat a lot today. What is funny, Chris? I think a couple times on accident I inhaled it. And that was really, really harsh. And then it went up my nose one time. And I feel like my nose is... What, Chris? My nose is still burning a little bit. I hope I didn't get cancer. What? What is it? Do I think cigars maybe aren't for me? No, I have to be a cigar guy. I want to be that guy with a what's that thing they keep them in, Chris? It starts with an A. Starts with an H. A Lewinsky. No. What, Chris? We can make jokes. A humidor. I want a humidor, a nice one, one that's nice. And I want to have one of those things where they clip off the end of it, one of the clip thingies. I saw a mob movie once where a guy used that to clip people's fingers off, and I've wanted one ever since. Not that I wanted to use it for that purpose, but I think it would be cool to have one. There's something manly about it, and I want to start being more of a cigar guy. I just don't want it to go up my nose anymore. And I'm doing a lot of coughing and throat clearing today. And I stunk when I got home. I walked in and Ob was all, "Oh my gosh, you smell like an ashtray." What, Chris? What? Chris said, "If I thought about a pipe." Here's my plan, because I have thought about a pipe. My plan is... I'm going to be a cigar guy until there's no more color in my beard at all. I mean, it's already going gray, but clearly I have some years left until it's full out Santa Claus. As soon as it's full out Santa Claus, I'm switching over to a pipe, and I'm going to be that guy. I feel like this is a great plan. Bob didn't seem that supportive of it when I mentioned it. And the boys already are acting like I'm Keith Richards because I've had 3 cigars in their lifetimes. I'm getting lectured by the boys. Dan, that's terrible for you. As if I need lectured by my sons. But I'm a cigar guy now. And I don't know what specific kinds of cigars they were, but they were brown and they were delicious. Kind of. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It's not my preferred vintage, but it wasn't bad. Jesse, please explain the difference in the views on the filibuster and their pros and cons. We have a filibuster because we were never supposed to be a majority rule country. The founders wanted it to be difficult to pass laws. They didn't want 51 senators to rule the United States of America. So they said, no, you need 60 votes to pass a law. That's what they said. Now, if you end the filibuster, that would mean that you can pass any law you want with 51 votes. That's what the whole argument is about. And the right is confused on this, and understandably so, because there are many people on the right who say Democrats, they're going to end the filibuster if they ever take back the Senate, and they're going to pass every law imaginable. And that's probably correct. Remember, the Democrats thought about ending the filibuster before, and there were Democrat senators, a couple of them, like Kristen Sinema, who stopped them, and then she lost. She's not in the Senate anymore because she stopped Democrats. So they got rid of the Democrats who were stopping them. So the people who say Democrats are going to do it, we better do it first, they're probably accurate. The problem we're in is this. You can say something like the SAVE Act. Sounds good. Have you tracked down 51 votes for the SAVE Act? We don't even have Mitch McConnell on board. We can't get everyone on board. If you told me we had the votes, I'd say, okay, well, maybe that's something we should go ahead and do. But we have a bunch of losers in the GOP. We can't pass a good law with these dorks running things. So if you can't pass a good law, what's the point of ending the filibuster? I just don't know what the point would be. All right, Carol Roth is going to join us next. I'm going to ask her about everything from consumer spending to student loan debt to cheeseburgers to everything else. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Wednesday. Remember, if you miss a single second, you will die. You have to download it on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Joining me now, as you can probably guess by the music, is my friend, recovering former investment banker, Carol Roth. Okay, Carol, tell me about these cheeseburgers we were talking about earlier.
All right, Jesse. Well, when you think about innovation, everyone keeps talking about AI, but I contend that the greatest innovation of 2026 is something I saw when I was watching some sports on television. Basically, it's a cheeseburger that they've cut in half and they've placed on a platter of sizzling queso so that, like, each half of the burger is just sitting in the queso. And I just feel like, in terms of American innovation, that we're really picking up the pace, because why have we not thought about that sooner? It's like the greatest invention of all time.
Gosh, I love this country. So, true story, Carol. TGI Fridays, and I don't know if they still exist anymore. I almost stabbed the guy with the fork in TGI Fridays one time, but that's another story. They used to have a cheeseburger where they put a round, like a hockey puck-shaped mozzarella stick on top of it, and then served it with a cup of queso, and you dipped it. It was like and the word cheese was in it like 10 times, the extra cheesy crunch burger or something. One of the great restaurant cheeseburgers I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, it's ahead of its time, obviously. Mm-hmm. But now in 2026, it is the time. It's the return. And I'm telling you, this is a sizzling, I think it's actually Applebee's, maybe. It's a sizzling platter of just like bubbling cheese with the sides of the burger. So you don't even have to do anything. You don't have to, like, you know, pick it up and dip it and be all neat. Like, it's already there for you for the taking.
I've been telling people about Applebee's not to sleep on it for a long time. Their chicken wings are underrated. Chicken fajita roll up. All right. We have to focus, Carol. In fact, I want to stay right there. I want you to tell me about consumer spending, because we see consumer spending solid. And then the next breath, you pick up an article and found out, wait a minute, it's the top 10% of wage earners, which begs the question, is no one else spending? Are people broke?
So it depends on which people. If you are an asset holder in this country, if you're somebody with a 401k and you're taking advantage of, you know, near highs in the stock market and you've got a house that's increased in equity, you're feeling pretty good and you're going out and spending. Funny enough, if you are making over six figures a year, you're going out and you're spending at Walmart because that's who's been driving their incremental growth in sales at Walmart are people who make at least six figures a year. So the people who are doing well, that have the high-paying jobs, that are holding the assets, those people are feeling great. However, if you're somebody who is young and getting out of college, if you don't have a big six-figure job, if you don't have assets, if you have a lot of debts, you know, whether it's credit card debt or other types of debt, you're not feeling so great. You're struggling to keep pace. So it really is the haves who are keeping this perception of a strong consumer, you know, in the front of the media and keeping the economy, quote unquote, afloat, while there's still a lot of people who are hoping that the affordability crisis that started under President Biden, that they would be feeling more relief today, and they're not quite there yet.
Okay, Carol, that leads me into, well, you just brought it up, college kids not finding work. Just saw another statistic yesterday. I think it was 40% graduates cannot find a job. This problem appears to be getting worse. And what I want to know is why. Are college kids dumber and less qualified? Are the jobs not there? Have they been handed to foreigners? Is corporate America contracting? Is it AI? What is happening? I have two sons approaching that age, and I'm worried.
Yeah, it's some of all of the above. I think the biggest frustration is that as the U.S. government has nationalized the student lending industry, what they've done is a wholesale wealth transfer from young people directly to college administrators. So young people are going to college. They're having to spend, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. They're coming out with five and six figures worth of debt. And there's no return on investment for most of them. As you're seeing, you know, a very large percentage of them aren't even able to find a relevant job. This is absolute predatory lending by our government, and it's absolute theft by these colleges and universities. And it seems like the biggest low-hanging fruit that this administration should be addressing, that Congress should be addressing right now, because it flows through everything. You know, if you're young and you have tons of debt, you put off starting a family, you put off, you can't buy a house, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's some of everything. They're not getting the right skills. It is a more competitive market. Companies aren't necessarily laying off. Some of the tech companies are, but not necessarily all of them. But they're not necessarily hiring a lot of new people either. There's concerns, particularly on the white-collar side, that's going to be aligned with somebody coming out of college, that AI, at least in the beginning, there's going to be an overcorrection where there's going to be less hiring in those arenas. And I just don't think that they're doing a good job of prepping for, you know, macro skills that are needed in the job market and, frankly, in life today.
Okay. So, look, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but if you're me, I have a 17-year-old. He's not really hot on college, but let's say he was or changes his mind. Which direction, where should I be guiding him? I know there are a lot of people listening who have kids in this situation or almost in this situation, and we want to offer help. What should they do?
So I think if you have a child who is not inclined to go to college and is inclined to do a trade, something that can't be replaced by AI day one, I think that that is a fantastic option. In fact, I think there is going to be, you know, what has sort of happened to manufacturing jobs, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, we'll probably see that at least for some period of time with white-collar jobs coming up here in the next few years and starting to see a little bit. If you do have a kid who wants to go to college and they cannot get a scholarship you know, to a bigger university to make the return on investment make sense, then a really good option is to have them go to a strong community program that isn't particularly expensive, at least for a couple of years, and then they can see what interests them, where their strengths lie, and then consider transferring, or they can continue to go down that path and they can network and get some real-world experience. One of the greatest things that kids have going for them is that people like to help them, right? Like, Jesse, if you and I called somebody up and said, hey, you know, can I talk to you? You know, they hang up the phone on us. Well, maybe not you, but definitely me. But a kid, you know, everyone wants to help them. So if there's an industry they're interested in, hey, I'm a student. I'd love to learn more about this. It's a great way to get on someone's radar, early networking. And we know that people who typically find jobs, you know, having somebody put their name at the top of the pile is way better in terms of the outcomes than trying to go through some sort of a recruiting process. So real world networking is a very undervalued skill, and leveraging the fact that you're a student and not spending too much money. I'll give you one other guidepost. So from my perspective, in terms of the amount of debt that you can take on to make your college ROI make sense, that if you are making an expected salary 3 to 5 years out of school, your debt should not be more than that. If it's more than that, you're never going to pay it back. So let's say you 3 to 5 years out of school, you're expecting to make $60,000 or $70,000 a year. You cannot come out with $100,000 of debt. Those numbers do not work out. I've ran the calculations many times. So, you know, if you're going to take on debt, it has to be worthwhile and it has to be going towards a good return on investment. But invest in yourself, invest in networking, call your, you know, friends and family members, friends and parents' friends, and anybody you want, you know, call them up off of LinkedIn, send them a note, and, you know, leverage the fact that you're a kid and people want to help young people succeed.
Carol, what's the greatest restaurant cheeseburger you've ever actually had? If it's a fancy steakhouse, that's fine. Look, if it's friggin' Wendy's, I get it. What's that restaurant cheeseburger that you put above all others?
Okay, so there's a place on in the north suburbs of Chicago called the Claim Company. And the Claim Company has a burger that's called the Mother Lode. And the Mother Lode, not only the burger itself, the meat itself is such a good quality, but it's a make-your-own-everything. So you get to pick the bun. You want pretzel. You want ciabatta. You want one with sesame, whatever it is. You can pick the cheese. You can even have Merck's cheese, which is like the greatest processed cheese you've ever had, like cheese spread in your life with a little bit of a sharp bite to it. You can put like any kind of topping you think about, and they just build it for you exactly to what you want with this delicious, delicious meat quality, and they get it right every time. So if you get a chance, they actually have a second place called Wick and Ore that also does it too, but the Claim Company in Northbrook, Illinois, that's my go-to burger.
My word, I'm starving now. Carol, you are the best. Come back soon. Thank you. Chris, did you look it up? Is it kosher, buddy? Not kosher. What if you leave the cheese off? Can you people eat it? What? Why are you making that face? It's still not kosher, even if you leave the cheese off? You can watch me eat it, Chris. Well, what? This is for you. I want you to get as close to it as possible. I'll even let you smell it, Chris. I'll tell you how good it is. I'll be happy to tell you. I'm happy to tell you about Relief Factor. I love telling people about Relief Factor because it works. I love when you email me about how much you love Relief Factor. When you have pain, it is life-destroying. It really genuinely is. When your knee hurts all the time, when your back, it's always hurting, when your wrist, your hand, it sucks. You can't do the things you want to do. Getting out of bed, standing up, sitting down. You're constantly doing that thing. It's awful. Don't live like that. Try Relief Factor. Developed by doctors, but 100% drug-free. Over 1 million people have already tried it, almost 70% call back and order more. Why do you think that is? 1-800, the number 4 relief. 3 weeks of it is $19.95. Just try that first. Maybe you don't like it. Try that first. 3 weeks, $19.95. ReliefFactor.com. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It's still real to me, damn it.
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Wednesday. You can email us your love, your hate, your death threats, Jesse at JesseKellyShow.com. I swear I'm going to get to some of those. As you can imagine, Jewish producer Chris dug into this burger place that Carol Roth was just talking about, the claim company. We go to commercial break. We just got back, obviously. I asked Chris, because I hadn't had a chance to look at anything yet, what he thought of it. And guess what I got back from Chris on my life. I'm telling him, Chris, the price. It's a $20 burger. I said, okay, I got that, Chris. I understand. But how does it look? Well, you have to pay extra for cheese. You have to pay extra for that. I didn't ask about the prices, Chris. I know if it's some elite restaurant burger, it's going to cost a fortune. I wanted to know how the food looked. Instead, I've had a pricing breakdown from you. You know, it's so frustrating sometimes. And you know what else is frustrating? So along the lines of family and young people, teenagers, college age, things like that. So my oldest son, James, he's a worker, which I love. I'm so blessed. He just loves to work, wants to work. Doesn't matter whether it's odd jobs, you name it. He's always, yeah, I'm in. He just wants to work, wants to earn money. He's a hard worker. He's also, like any boy, he likes video games, of course, and but to a different level. Like, he codes them. Like, he edits them. He writes. He does art. He does all that stuff. He's not just by hand on a computer, 3D modeling. Like, he's just always been into that stuff. Real, real talented. I don't have that. Whatever that is, God didn't give that to me. Anyway, James has it. So I've yesterday reached out to a good friend of mine because I want James to maybe end up at a tech school, a trade school of some kind for that kind of thing, if I can avoid having him go to college, if that's what he ends up wanting to do for a living. So I reached out to a friend yesterday. I said, hey, you know anybody in this industry? Anybody, you know, Sega or Xbox or whatever, computer games? I don't know who makes all this crap, but do you know anyone in that industry who might be interested in letting him intern? I'm not looking for some nice gig or something like that. Let him intern, sniff around. Buddy responds immediately, yeah, I'll work on it. I know a bunch of people. But he throws in the but, and I should have seen this coming. But AI makes it hard now. And look, it's just one example, right? Don't get me wrong. We'll figure things out. I'll figure it out, and James will figure it out, and we have whatever God has for us, but I know that maybe you're in that situation right now. Maybe you are that person and you're slamming into a wall jobs-wise, or you have a daughter or a son in that situation. It was the reason I bring this up is it's probably the first time that hit me because he's 17 now, and before it just been odd jobs. He's going to go do this and deliver that, and he'll go clean out your garage and do that stuff, but now that he's finally starting to look for legitimate employment, and that was one of the first things I heard, I thought to myself, wow, that just brought it home, didn't it? That sucks. And it's a struggle. I understand economies are always changing. You just heard what Carol said about the 80s and 90s when we watched all the manufacturing jobs disappear. I understand economies are changing and technology changes things and stuff like that, but that has to feel like quite a rug pull for a lot of people who went into a field and did the right thing and got grades, and maybe you even picked the right degree for the field you wanted to go into. You know, you're not majoring in basket weaving and African American studies. You actually got a degree in something that matters, and now you're sitting there with college loan debt, with or without it, and you can't find a job. And I've had friends of mine lament this many times before. He can't get a call back. He can't find a job. Now, they're all white, right? I mean, that's tough in corporate America for that particular demographic right now. Everybody has to be diverse. Anyway, that's another story. But still, that was the first time. It was last night. That was the first time I got that, oh, that sucks. That sucks. And I'm so stupid. The second I started thinking along those lines for James, immediately, because I'm an idiot, immediately I had him working for, you know, Xbox or something like that as an internship. And of course, because I'm a father, they're of course going to love him. He'll be the best employee ever. And he'll be the CEO in 2 years. And I'm an idiot. Okay, I admit that. I'm a moron. It hit me. It sucks. If you're going through that, I'm sorry. And we'll work it out. All right? All right. I know I owe you a bunch of emails. We still have to make fun of Bill Gates. Canada's just flat out slaughtering people now in record numbers. Talk about jobs that are coming in, may or may not be coming in. All that and so much more still to come in the final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's just take a moment and sing.
Hold us. No wedding cars that Larnos had told us.
And let's save a baby's life real quick, shall we? That's what preborn does. They find these mothers who have made the worst decision in the world, lost, scared, confused, and preborn offers love and care and help. They don't just scream at her, cheers life! There's none of that. It's, hey, why don't you come in? Free ultrasound. And then maybe, by the way, maybe she needs more than that. Maybe she needs help. Maybe she's in an abusive relationship she needs out of. Maybe she needs diapers, formula. But up to 2 years of care. Preborn is doing this with your help and your partnership. Whatever you can give them, give them. If you want to buy that ultrasound, that buys a life, $28. Whatever you can do, it's tax deductible. Saving a life and writing it off on your taxes, that's got to feel pretty good, right? Preborn.com/Jesse. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We'll be back.